what does it mean to be a man? How we answer that question might be different today than 1,000 years ago, or 100, or maybe even 10. Is masculinity something biological, or social, or philosophical, or all of the above? How in today's world does a boy, or even someone older, learn about living into their gender, their place in their family, and their world? I'm Brian Ellison. This is Central Standard. We'll talk later this hour about the changing meaning of masculinity. But first, a different kind of conversation, also involving some muscle flexing, maybe some posturing. In a couple of hours in Jefferson City, the Missouri General Assembly will reconvene for its annual veto override session, and Capitol observers are expecting quite a show. There's more on the line this year and some genuinely uncertain outcomes. Joining us for a preview is Marshall Griffin of St. Louis Public Radio. You know him from our KCUR newscast as our State House reporter. Marshall, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
So this happens every year in just about every state, but Missouri's veto override session is poised for some real news this year. Remind us why that is.
Well, this is a rather unprecedented veto session this year, because you had two rather high-profile bills that the governor vetoed. Specifically, the one that's gotten the most attention is what's referred to as House Bill 253. It is the tax cut proposal. Basically, it would cut income tax rates for both individuals, but more key for corporations in Missouri. A lot of Republican lawmakers, specifically Republican lawmakers from the Kansas City area, have been pushing this bill because they say this will enable us to compete with Kansas because of the deep tax cuts that they authorized last year, and also tax cuts in Oklahoma and Tennessee. On the other side of the state, the southeastern corner of Missouri, Tennessee does not have a state income tax. So it's basically a call to make Missouri a more tax-friendly state in the eyes of the business world, and also of the Republican majority in Missouri. And, of course, the governor vetoed the bill, saying that it goes too far. It'll gut funding for education, for social services. It will threaten the state's AAA credit rating. That's been the message that Governor Nixon has taken across the state all summer long, and you could, in effect, say that his summer is at stake.
Yeah.
But, you go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, you mentioned he's been traveling all across the state. It even was on the front page of the New York Times yesterday. The ways that the governor has managed to win over some Republican support for his position, too, right?
Right. And, in fact, I believe there might have been one or two Republicans that were even iffy back during the regular session. But last count that I had, I don't have the exact count in front of me, but there was roughly a half dozen Republicans who said that they are not going to vote to override this bill. Some of those Republicans happen to be in districts where a majority of their constituents are probably not Republicans, maybe like, say, 48-49%. So their reelection chances might be a bit iffy.
Well, remind us the makeup of the Missouri General Assembly. Why is it so important that every Republican go along with a veto override?
Well, simply put, there's a two-thirds majority vote required to override a veto, and the Republicans have exactly two-thirds majority in the House. 109 votes is the minimum needed to override the veto, and 109 Republicans is the exact number in the Missouri House at this moment.
Pretty close in the Senate, too, right?
And the Senate margin is actually a little larger. I believe it's 24 Republicans. I'll have to double-check on that figure.
But they still have a veto-proof majority there.
They do, and the Senate has a little bit more of a cushion than the House does. And the House has absolutely no room for error, while the Senate could probably still afford to lose one Republican vote.
So this all comes down to the wire today. The bill you mentioned, House Bill 253, is there still something of a showdown? Is there still some arm wrestling over votes, or does it look like it's headed to the veto being sustained?
It doesn't look good for an override. We've heard that the House Speaker, now originally House Speaker Tim Jones said he would not bring it up for an override attempt if he didn't have the votes. But a couple of days ago, he kind of changed his tune and said, you know, even if we don't have the votes, we're going to bring it up for an override attempt. And that's basically just to kind of get a gauge of who among his own party members are opposing the bill. That could have some ramifications down the road for, you know, other bills and other committee assignments, things like that. And also perhaps who to target to have other Republicans run against some of those incumbents in primaries. So Yeah, there will be. I would say there absolutely will be an override attempt on House Bill 253, and it is almost certainly doomed to fail. I think we would all be shocked if this actually did pass.
So we're looking at not only this bill about taxes, but also another very controversial bill, House Bill 436, which it sounds like may have a likelier chance of being overridden. Remind us what House Bill 436 does.
Oh, that's the gun nullification bill. Basically, what this does is that it would declare any federal gun control law that interferes with a Missourian's Second Amendment rights to be, quote, null and void. It also would allow for they would also put federal officers in jeopardy of being arrested and charged with a misdemeanor if they enforce a federal gun control law that interferes with a Missourian's Second Amendment rights.
And is that legal?
Well, that's probably really for a judge to say, or a court to say, not so much for me to say. But you would think it would not hold up in court that a federal judge somewhere would eventually strike that down, whether it would be the Supreme Court or a lower court.
And that, of course, is why Governor Nixon vetoed the bill. He said it violates the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Actually would put law enforcement officers in jeopardy. Why are Republicans supporting this bill so strongly?
Basically, the reason why this got such strong support among Republicans is what happened in Newtown, Connecticut back in December, and President Obama's very strong reaction to what happened and the push to take on assault rifles in this country. That planted the seeds for House Bill 436. And the strong push by Republicans, because they looked at this as more federal government intrusion upon the rights of Missouri citizens. You know, this is basically what it is about an overreaching federal government. That's the view that is driving this bill. Mm-hmm. Now, and after Chris Koster's legal opinion about a week or two ago, saying that this would interfere with police departments and with federal local task forces, basically forcing them to cease operations. A lot of police chiefs across the state, the Sheriff's Association, the police chiefs associations, all came out against this bill saying, hey, wait a minute, this is going to interfere with our ability to combat drugs, to combat street gangs, to combat all other types of crime where we need federal help.
And thus some Democrats have been given the cover to vote against this, even if they don't want to be seen as anti-gun.
It's at this point, it's looking like it will not be overridden as well because of this this late push by the police chiefs and sheriffs.
Are there other significant bills coming up for a possible override?
Actually, there's one bill in particular that has probably the best chance of being overridden, and that is something called the Doe Run bill. And basically, what this bill is in reference to the Doe Run Corporation, which has a lead mining operation in East Missouri. They in East Central Missouri, near the St. Louis area, they purchased some lead-contaminated land about 20 years or so ago, back in the mid-1990s. And what they're seeking is protection from punitive damages and lawsuits. They're basically saying, you know, we're making a good-faith effort to clean up the site and to not pollute, while their opponents are saying absolutely not. They're you know, putting out products that have dangerous levels of lead in them, and they are not they're not doing what they say they're doing, and they need to be punished via lawsuits. So basically, seeking lawsuit and heavy damage protection from the Missouri General Assembly.
Why did the governor veto that?
Well, he basically said that this would strip away the ability to seek justice and seek protection from people who have been harmed by lead in lawsuits. And depending on which side of the political fence you may fall on, that could also be interpreted as the governor giving some kudos to the Missouri Bar and other you know, trial attorney groups, basically doing them a favor. Now, if that may or may not be the case, but I will tell you this, when this bill did pass, it had very strong bipartisan support. A lot of Democrats voted for this as well because they saw this as an economic development bill, because Doe Run has said if we don't get this lawsuit protection, we might have to leave Missouri, and that would cost the St. Louis area roughly 1,500 jobs.
So passing that bill was something of a display of bipartisanship by this legislature. I guess I'm curious, you've been covering the State House for a while now, Marshall. How does this session compare with others? Are things now hopelessly partisan, or do you actually see some cooperation and collaboration?
I don't know if I would say hopelessly partisan, because depending on the bill or the issue, bipartisanship could break out at any moment, at any time.
Look out.
Yeah, but I will say this. This has been probably the most unusual and most high-profile veto session I've ever covered. You have groups spending millions of dollars on TV and radio ads advocating for bills to be overridden or for bills to not be overridden. You've got people spending money left and right, trying to affect what's going to happen later today. And that's something that, most veto sessions just kind of, sleepy, quiet, sometimes they don't even last more than an hour. But this one might actually go 2 or 3 days, depending on how many bills they want to, try to take up and override.
And I guess I'm curious about the kind of the atmosphere there. I mean, the regular session opens and closes with a lot of pomp and circumstance, the State of the State address and all the ceremonial stuff. How is the veto override session different from that? Is it sort of more all business?
It's more just straight down nothing but business. For starters, you can't introduce any new legislation during a veto session. You're only allowed to deal with vetoed bills. Now, and there might still be some last-minute jockeying for positions to try to get enough votes for an override on one or more particular bills. Now, another thing that distinguishes this veto session, I should also mention this. Right now, as we speak, there is a pro-Second Amendment gun nullification rally going on outside the Capitol steps. The people who are in support of overriding the veto on that bill are holding a big rally, roughly 200 people out there. A number of lawmakers have spoken. State Senator Brian Nieves, who is a very outspoken, very I don't know if the word flamboyant would apply here, but if you can be flamboyant about gun about gun rights, then he's your
this
man.
This is it, okay?
So he basically got up in front of this crowd and he pointed across the street to the state Supreme Court building, which also is the offices of the Attorney General. One half of the building actually belongs to the Attorney General, and he said he pointed across the building and he told that crowd to boo Chris Koster for his legal opinion on House Bill 436.
Sounds like quite an interesting display going on there today, Marshall. The session is at noon, and how long do we expect it to last?
I can't answer that question.
All right.
There's just so much going on. It could last. If it's going to be a one-day session, I expect it to probably last all afternoon if we're just going to have one day. But it could go, like I said, it could go for 2 days, could go 3 days. I think they have a time limit of 8 days, and then after that, I suppose they could call a special session if they needed to.
Well, we will follow that story and bring you the latest here on KCUR. That's Marshall Griffin of St. Louis Public Radio. He was joining us live from Jefferson City. Marshall, so good to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Sure, thank you.
Coming up, the changing face of masculinity.